to be counted.
Stand to be counted.
Be in the number.
Be in the number.
There's nothing to
be
it.
Be in the number.
I'll help you through
be
it.
Be in the number.
Stand to be counted. Be in the number.
Looked at one way, the census is as dull as dishwater. Numbers piled on numbers counted by diligent U.S. Census Bureau employees. But numbers tell stories, stories such as why slaves were counted as three-fifths persons until the adoption of the 14th Amendment in 1868. Stories such as why the current administration wanted a citizenship question on the upcoming census but got turned down by the U.S. Supreme Court. In our last census in 2010, U.S. population numbered just under 309 million people. New Mexico weighed in with just over 2 million people. Why do the numbers matter? Why are the stakes so high? Simply put, the numbers allocate both political power and money in the U.S. The census determines the number of seats each state gets in Congress, the size of districts of state legislatures, and the number of electoral college votes each state gets in presidential races. The census also determines bread and butter issues like how much federal money individual states get for programs like Medicaid, highway construction, food, housing, education programs, and much more. Percentage-wise, New Mexico ranks in the top tier of states who rely on the federal dollar. So there's a lot of money riding on the outcome of the 2020 census for New Mexico, some $6.2 billion, according to research from George Washington University. That's why an accurate count of our population matters so much. But according to the U.S. Census Bureau, New Mexico is considered a hard-to-count state. I spoke with official New Mexico demographer Robert Radigan to find out about census issues in our state. Welcome, Robert. If you would, walk us through the 2020 census. What kinds of questions will be on the census, and how and when will it be administered?
Well, the census will be administered around April 1st, 2020. That's the operational date when the Census Bureau wants to know where you were living, and they only want to count folks that were alive on that day. But in reality, the census is going to take several months to conduct. And people have the opportunity, this is the first time that the United States is offering an online option, so Americans or those residing in the United States will be encouraged to complete their census online first, but there'll also be a paper form. Folks can complete their census over the phone. And then for those that don't respond in one of those three methods, they'll fall into what's called non-response follow-up. And that's where they're going to get a knock on the door, and a census enumerator is going to ask them the 10 census questions. The decennial census is a rather short questionnaire. It's only 10 questions, but really there's only about 6 questions that they're deriving actual data from. The other 4 are quality control questions in there to make sure that everything adds up, ask for your phone number, and that's just for clarification if things don't make sense or if there's contradictory information in the questionnaire. So they really just want to know how many people are living in the house. They want to know the age, sex, race, and ethnicity of everybody living in the household. And they want to know the relationship of everybody to the head of the household. And then finally, there's one question that applies to the house rather than the individual, and that's whether the house is owned, it's rented, mortgaged, or if people residing there are living there without making any payment.
Now, the question of U.S. citizenship has become quite controversial as we head into the 2020 census. Were census questions about U.S. citizenship asked in previous years?
They were. There was a question on citizenship status up until about 1950. You know, if we look at the questions that the census asked over the last 220, 230 years, we saw quite an increase over 100 years ago. At one point, there were far more questions than there are asked now. And what the scientists at the Census Bureau determined in the 1950s is that they wanted to keep the questionnaire as simple as they could and as non-controversial as they could, because the constitutional mandate of the decennial count is to get an accurate head count of everybody in the country. When you begin to ask too many questions or you ask controversial questions, you drive down participation. So what the scientists realized in the 1950s was that the citizenship question was one of those things that was undermining the constitutionally mandated headcount. So they made the decision to remove that question.
Now, in addition to the census, I understand something called the American Community Survey is also coming up. That American Community Survey has many more questions than the census, things like work status, home values, schooling of household members, and so forth. Tell our listeners about the Community Survey and why it's necessary.
So the Census Bureau has been conducting the American Community Survey since about 2005. And it's an ongoing survey. They sample millions of American households every year, including but not just the decennial census year. So this is something that listeners might receive in the mail tomorrow, or they could receive it the same day that they receive the decennial questionnaire in March. The American Community Survey begins to delve into much more detailed questions that get at data that simply can't be arrived at with its 10 questions. This is a sample survey, so the idea is we're just going to ask these questions of a sampling of Americans. This is where the Census Bureau now gets the citizenship question that is included in the American Community Survey.
Is the census mandatory, but the community survey is not, or are both mandatory?
Both questionnaires are mandatory and are required to be completed by law every question. Now, it's important to note here that this has never been enforced. So yes, it's required by law, but in practice, it's simply not enforced.
The U.S. Census Bureau has declared New Mexico as a hard-to-count state. What does that mean, and why does it matter?
New Mexico is harder to count than most every other state by a number of measures. The simplest way we can say that is that we look at the response rates from the 2010 census. And in 2010, only about 71% of New Mexican households completed their questionnaire when they received it. And the other 29% of households fell into that non-response follow-up, and they had to receive a knock on the door. This is much lower than the national average. And it's important because the 2020 census will cost about $15 billion to conduct. And the largest share of that money is going to go into that non-response follow-up phase. So the more households in New Mexico, the more households in the country that don't respond, they begin to cut into that non-response follow-up budget. So it's important that we motivate as many New Mexican households to respond at the first pass as possible. When people self-respond, when households self-respond to the census, the research makes clear that that creates the best, most accurate census count.
Drilling down from the state to various counties in the U.S., it appears that the counting problems are more serious in western counties. And I would note that in Catron County, New Mexico, for example, only 45% of households returned their census forms. That number goes up to 68% for Santa Fe County and then 77% in Bernalillo County. You just touched on hard-to-count areas. Is it a rural versus urban issue? And how do you explain the differences from county to county?
Well, there's different reasons that different parts of the country and different parts of New Mexico don't respond to the census. My sense is that in Catron County, there is just a very strong libertarian streak, a distrust of the federal government, and folks just don't see it as in their interest to complete this form. In other parts of the state, the issue might come down to, for example, a large number of immigrants living in an area, or a large number of individuals who don't speak English as their primary language. In that case, it's not so much a distrust of the federal government, although that certainly could be a factor. It might just be an educational issue. A lot of people residing in the United States that are not citizens of this country don't necessarily understand that they can and should complete their census form. It's very different reasons in different parts of the state.
Now, I understand that undercounting of the Native American population is a particularly serious problem. What are the causes of that? Is it the remoteness issue, or is it something else, or a combination, and what can be done?
Well, I think it is a combination of those two factors. The Census Bureau has had a problem getting complete count of Native American populations for many decades. I think distrust of the federal government is certainly a factor. We know that some tribal areas have a history of being undercounted more so than others, and the greater distrust of the federal government could be an issue here. But even in New Mexico, the problems with counting our pueblos are very different than the problems in counting Navajo Nation. So one of the barriers to a complete census count is knowing where to look for people, right? So that's the first thing. The Census Bureau has to know about your house if they are going to send you a questionnaire or send a person to go answer those questions. If we're looking at the pueblos in New Mexico, the housing is relatively dense. So if a census enumerator or a census taker is walking through the pueblo trying to count each house, they're following an address list. But not every house is necessarily on that list, right? Housing lists are difficult to maintain, and this is a bigger problem on tribal lands than in urban areas, for example. So the census taker can follow the list, and if there's a house that they see that's not on their list, they can still walk up, knock on the door, and attempt to count that house. And if you're walking or driving one of our pueblos, you're probably going to find most of the houses. Doesn't mean the house will necessarily want to respond or you get accurate answers, but at least they'll have the opportunity to be counted. In Navajo Nation, it's a very different situation. Just because you're standing at the door of one house, you may not see the next house simply because of how sparsely populated Navajo Nation is. So there's a real issue in Navajo Nation of even knowing where to go look for people, and it's independent of any distrust or desire anybody might have to not complete their census form.
So would there be education efforts in that case?
We know from focus groups and from surveys that the thing that resonates most with people that could help motivate them to respond to the census is to tie their census response to federal dollars and other money that flows into a community based on census counts. So if we can help people understand how a complete census count means better roads, schools, health care for that community, we can drive up participation. So it's important that we raise that awareness within our Native American community and that we get buy-in from leadership, from the elders, for help, so that they can convey that message to the people living in the community.
Finally, what is the state government doing to ensure a better census count in 2020?
Governor Lujan Grisham established New Mexico 2020 Statewide Complete Count Commission, and that has been appropriated $3.5 million from the legislature. That commission has met twice already. The commission is now determining the best way to make use of those funds and how to leverage existing networks within state government. So if we look at, say, the Medicaid network, a large percentage of our state is on Medicaid. So we can leverage those networks to help spread the word, to help any household that has somebody on Medicaid, help them understand how a complete census count is tied to Medicaid dollars. And we can do that with not just Medicaid, but through the public education department. So we know that particularly with immigrant families, it's often the children that will educate the parents on the census. And so there is census in schools curriculum that's been developed at the national level, and we need to push that out through the public education department. So the Secretary for Public Education, like a dozen other cabinet secretaries, is on that commission. So we're trying to identify ways to leverage existing networks within the state. We don't want to do everything from the state level, so there's important things we can do at the state level, but this needs to be community and local government based as well. So the messaging that works in a community in the southern part of the state along the border that has a lot of immigrants is going to take a different campaign than trying to motivate farmers in Curry County.
Thanks very much to our guest, Robert Radigan, who is New Mexico's official demographer. He is also Associate Director of Geospatial and Population Studies at the University of New Mexico. For KSFR, I'm Mary Lou Cooper.
Stand to be counted. Stand to be counted. Be in the number. There's nothing to it.